every network has this moment where they're like, yeah, we can do a TV show with dinosaurs. Like, we can, let's throw some dinosaurs in there. let's see what this is about. And it never works. Yeah, it never works.
The cruel hammer of reality comes down. And it's all
yeah, it's called
gone.
A meteor. Hey there.
Hello.
You're listening to Out of Dodge, a podcast hosted by us. I'm Trevor.
And I'm Shane.
And we went to film school, so we feel like we can talk about things on the internet. Specifically, what things, Shane, do we like to talk about?
Movies, TV shows, pop culture news, and sometimes we like to take a deep dive into a terrible show that you probably forgot about.
We're doing all of those today.
That's true.
Every single one. We thought it'd be a good idea to talk about a little trope of sorts, a little thematic element in films. Time travel. Because it's in a lot of science fiction movies. It's weird, and every movie kind of does it a little differently. Not in a good way sometimes.
Yeah.
Sometimes in a real dumb, bad way.
Yeah.
Specifically, there's some movies that came out recently that have to do with time travel. So, The Tomorrow War, starring Chris Pratt and others. And,
Tenet.
Just Tenet, man.
Just Tenet. So we've been doing bits about Tenet for like a year and a half. And the movie was finally put on HBO Max a little while ago, so we went in there. Then we went back in there, get it? Time travel.
So time travel as a concept is often used as a storytelling device to kind of do weird, wacky things. Sometimes it's to, you know, go back in time to grab Socrates so he can tell you about something so you can write a paper or whatever Bill and Ted was about.
Something like that. That sounds right.
Other times, you're trying to change the past. Or no, change the future. The future. Like you're an Avenger or you're Marty McFly trying to get your parents to bang. I guess there's two schools of thought when it comes to time travel, right?
Sure.
That time is like a fixed circle, right? Like everything has already happened.
Okay.
And you can't really alter anything with your presence or your shenanigans that you get up to. But any shenanigans you do get up to, you were supposed to, because that's how, you know, certain events would then unfold. The other one is like time is more malleable. So, you know, you're like Marty McFly, right? And you're like, my life sucks. Yikes, I have an old man who's my best friend. And then you go back in time, you're like, wow, I'm gonna make my parents fall in love. And you do, and then you come back to the future and it's better. You have a cool car, your parents are pretty neat, the bully is your butler or something. It's very weird. So yeah, I mean, each movie kind of takes its spin on that differently. And actually, interesting enough, both movies that we're talking about today Take a look at both different kinds of thought when it comes to time travel, whether it is fixed and events happen as they're supposed to, or time and space are malleable and you can affect things with knowledge or tools from the future.
So I agree with you in that both of these thoughts exist. But I will say that when I watch a movie or a TV show that's like, hey, everybody, it's time travel and we're going to get up to all kind of wacky things and anything is possible. And then it ends and they're like, hey, the lesson was you should never time travel, you dumb, stupid asshole. And I'm like, well, hey, then why did I come here?
Yeah.
Why did you make this at all? If the lesson was to not do it, that seems like a huge waste of my time.
What movie's that?
Probably Butterfly Effect.
Oh, yeah.
Which is like, never time travel.
Don't do it. You won't exist.
A bad film, by the way. Time travel, currently, mm-hmm. and maybe forever, is not a real thing. And because you're using it in movies and TV and as like an artistic thing, you don't have to get all bogged down in the fact that, oh, well, if you do this, then this would happen. Like, you can kind of have fun with it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. You don't have to succumb to the, oh, if you do a mild thing wrong, it would destroy all of space and time, which could be true. But you can have fun with it.
Yeah, but I feel like it's more fun to be flexible, you know?
Yeah.
Because, like, in Avengers, you know how they screw up in, like, 2014, so they have to go to the 60s?
2012, yeah.
2012. Excuse me. They have to go to, like, the 50s or 60s to, like, grab some more pimp articles. Like, if it was one of those super, like, rigid, we have to play by the rules, like, taking that stuff would cause, like, this whole butterfly effect. I'm using quotations. Which, you know, would be, like, a whole big problem later. But they're like, eh, no consequences. Who gives a shit? Because that's not what we want to focus on. And I think that's fine.
A lot of it obviously has to do with tone. Time travel, I think, can work in, like, a lot of different genres and work really well as a plot device. Sometimes it's just, like, we're trying to get from point A to B or point B to A.
Yeah.
You know, time travel. And other times it's kind of like a comedic thing. Like, there are a lot of rom-coms that weirdly use it pretty effectively. And then there are dramas and action movies recently have kind of done a good job, some more than others, at using time travel as kind of a wild reason for the story to happen.
Would you, no pun intended, loop in time loop movies?
Yes,
like Groundhog Day, Day After, not Day After Tomorrow, Edge of Tomorrow.
I did write a whole bit about time loop movies.
Yeah.
So now that you've unearthed this thing from me. Time loop films, which I might have talked about before when we talked about action films, are like my favorite subgenre ever.
Mm-hmm.
And it's one of those things, like, they started with Groundhog Day in 1993, and it was like a fun little comedy where he learned a lot because he was stuck in this hell and he became a better person.
Mm-hmm.
And you were like, that's a fun movie. But they kept making them, and somehow it worked. It's an idea that's really cool and interesting, and kind of forces characters to confront, like, this infinite amount of time, and they're forced to become a better person or save the world or, like, accomplish impossible things, and it's really interesting. And they've managed to make it work in all these different movies, like Palm Springs is a rom-com and it works really well, or The Map of Tiny Perfect Things is really funny, and Edge of Tomorrow, as we said, is, like, a great action film that feels like a video game and is really cool and uses the time loop to make the characters smarter and better people.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think is pretty good.
Pretty neat. No, I super like that.
Sometimes they explain it. Sometimes they're like, you know, it's crazy.
Alien goop or whatever, you know?
Alien goop. Regardless of, like, why the time travel thing is happening, time loops are super entertaining.
Yeah.
And I'm a fan of it.
Would you include Interstellar on that list of time travel movies?
I mean, I think that is time travel.
I mean, yeah, because it goes... I mean, it's physics. It's like physics travel, you know?
Yeah, but it's still time.
Yeah, but, like, it's a black hole and it goes slower or something. I don't know.
I'm still going to call that time... I think that's still time travel, yeah.
Okay, cool.
Because I wrote that down. I mean, it's one of my favorite films, and it's, like, super cool and very intense, and it's one of those things that feels really smart but isn't, like, too complicated,
mm-hmm.
which is great, because then you feel smart but you also don't feel dumb, so it's a win. It takes itself very seriously, but it doesn't feel bogged down by, like, the time travel. They kind of just are like, that black hole is weird, there you go.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad I asked that question then. So, since we just mentioned Interstellar, which was made by one Christopher Nolan, should we talk about Tenet? I'm gonna watch Tenet on my Game Boy SP as it was intended to be watched.
It failed. It lost Warner Brothers a lot of money. Kind of a reaction to his dumb fuckery.
I'm hot, I'm angry, and I'm ready to rumble.
Tenet, 2020's most infamous film.
I think we talked about Tenet, like, if not the first episode of our podcast. Probably, we did that one, was like the summer of delays or whatever.
Yeah,
we
did
that.
That
was like the third or fourth podcast that we did. So this is like a long time coming. This is like 20 episodes down the pipe, you know? This is the Tenet arc. This is phase one of our podcast. So,
yeah. This is our Avengers.
Mm-hmm.
So, in the very vaguest of terms, for the interest of understanding what we're talking about, Tenet was a 2020 film. Written and directed by Christopher Nolan. It was a time travel spy action thriller movie where this one guy who's named the protagonist. Mm-hmm. The protagonist is trying to stop the end of the world, which is this evil dude who's trying to set off a time bomb because he has cancer and because he's like, well, if I'm dying, everyone dies. That's the film. And they... Good news, they stop him, sort of, and then it ends.
Robert Pattinson's there.
Robert Pattinson is there.
He honestly was my favorite part of the whole movie. But anyways.
I agree. I liked his vibes.
There's this whole thing about there's certain objects and people that are inversed, which means that they're, like, from the future,
they went through the time
or whatever.
Door.
It's like...
They went through the time door.
They go through a time door, and suddenly everything goes backwards. But they're going forwards, but it's backwards... If you're in the real world, see how stupid this movie
is?
This
sounds insane, and I've seen it.
Yeah, no, it's insane, and I feel like we're doing a pretty good job describing it.
As bad as we sound explaining it, the movie is worse.
If it was anyone else but Christopher Nolan, people would just be making fun of him relentlessly. But since it was Christopher Nolan, it has like a 78 on Rotten Tomatoes, which I feel like is far too high.
Way too high.
No, everybody,
I went into this movie ready to not like it for several reasons. Chief among them being the fact that Christopher Nolan thought his super cool time travel movie was so important that it was worth people dying when it was nowhere near time to release movies in movie theaters.
Yeah, for context, you might have forgotten because a lot's happened in the last like 6 months. But so it was in 2020 and it was pushed back for, you know, obvious Waterworld stunt show reasons. And he was like, well, I hate that my movie might have to go to HBO Max for streaming. Streaming's stupid. It needs to be watched on the big screen. I'll have you know, Christopher Nolan, I watched Tenet on my phone the way it was meant to be watched.
I'm impressed with that only because that would drive me insane, personally. The car flipped so many times.
I was in my bed on my phone with my AirPods in like this, like on my side, just
it's
holding
so
it like
long,
3 inches from my face.
It's so
I had
long.
To charge my phone twice, but like pre Waterworld stunt show vaccines, he was like, everyone pile into a dark room together and watch my movie. He was like, this is my project. This is so important. People need to see it right now. So, did people get sick? Maybe. I mean, wet? Whatever. The analogy's falling apart, but like...
Did the movie maybe lose a little bit of money and force Warner Brothers to make a drastic decision?
Yes.
About releasing their slate on HBO Max?
Yes.
Maybe. Anyway, let's get back to the actual film here. There's a lot wrong with it, but can I skip to the very end with the thing that makes me the most angry?
Yeah, and then we'll work backwards.
Great. Well, because it's time travel, so I think that's fine. at the very end of the movie, there's like this huge final battle and we're training all these soldiers to do time war.
Mm-hmm.
And then they take the army that we're using to fight the bad guys and then inverse them so they can go fight backwards or whatever. It doesn't really make any sense.
It's a temporal pincer movement.
You know, that's just a bunch of words is what that is. It doesn't fucking mean anything. My big problem with the final fight, they storm this, it's like a cool abandoned stone city,
yeah.
Right? As far as the setting goes, it looks kind of cool. So they roll up in there and they start shooting. You do not see the enemy army. There are no enemy soldiers, like, at any point. Maybe you see somebody in a window for a fraction of a second, but basically, there's nobody there. It's just...
The thing is, it's like, our time army boys, they're all wearing green camo. Like a light green camo. The enemy boys, they're wearing, like, whitish... urban camo, so they look virtually identical. Like, there's like literally no difference between the two armies, and it's like, what's the point of even doing that at that point? You know,
there's no stakes. You don't really see anybody. There aren't any cool takedowns. You don't really feel like we're winning or losing. It's just such an empty experience. It's so terrible.
We'll go into some more specifics that kill me, but overall, in the grand scheme, right, the protagonist, which honestly, him not having a name didn't piss me off as much as I thought it would. The thing that gets me the most is that, like, someone is like, hey, they're gonna start a war, World War III, worse than nuclear, and he just believes it? And I'm like, wouldn't it be cool to see, like, I don't know, a city get, like, messed up, or, like, there was nothing to show that there was anything at stake.
The stakes in this movie are so nebulous.
Yes.
As I mentioned, you can't 100% see the enemy army at the end, or you don't really understand what the bad guy is doing, or you don't really understand the threat that they pose, or there's no real personal connection between the main character and the villain, or the main character and, like, anyone else that's in danger, so you don't really feel anything about anything that's happening. It's empty.
Yeah.
It's like a void experience.
Yeah. It's so weird, because I'm like, why are we fighting? Like, I get to preserve.
Why, but why?
Like, I don't know, the earth. But, like, at the same time, I'm like, what's so bad about future time people? I want to see why they're bad. I want to see why they care. Why I should care, you know? And, like, the villain, by the way, is just a garbo nothing dude. He's a big no nothing. He's just a big rich guy. And, like, he's not, like, a charismatic, cool rich guy. He's just, like, a rich guy who says a lot of things and, like, lets people live far longer than they should, you know?
There's so much talking in this film.
And it's talking purely just to speak. Like, you know how I have issues with Aaron Sorkin as a writer?
Oh, yeah. No, I do,
with,
too.
With dialogue, because I'm like, okay, well, everyone reads at, like, a Ivy League college level and everyone speaks so eloquently. In this film, everyone is just so utilitarian when they speak. There's like a few lines that the protagonist says where I'm like, oh, okay, some spice. Because like he gets pulled into the kitchen to get like killed. And he's like, hey, I asked for my hot sauce an hour ago. And I was like, that's funny. Like, that's good.
Yeah, that's a decent fight. Yeah,
and that's a good fight. We love a good kitchen fight. But that's the only like human moment of the entire movie. Everyone's so robotic. Everyone's so robotic.
That's 100% a script thing, because the movie, again, is trying to sell itself as being like the smartest thing you've ever seen. And it's just so boring. And this, again, this is one of my main problems with bad time travel movies, yeah, or bad movies in general, is that you don't really have to explain it as much as you think you do.
Mm-mm.
And I'm not saying don't explain it at all. You know, you can be like, there's a flux capacitor, and the audience will go, great, yeah, sure, car goes,
go back cargo burn.
That's really all we need.
Yeah.
You don't have to spend, like, hours talking about, well, if this bomb blows up in the bottom of this well, it'll set off the bomb in 2894, and I'm like, just have the movie happen.
Yeah, like, one of my favorite time travel movies is Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure.
I got that vibe from earlier.
Because yeah, it's just so fun, and they just,
it's great.
They don't really explain it, they're like, here's a phone booth that travels in time, and it does, and it's great. I just think that it's trying too hard to be cool.
Oh, no, definitely.
You know?
And it's not cool.
I think it's a really good movie for about 5 minutes, and then time travel stuff starts happening. The part in the theater, with the terrorism in the theater,
that
was really
good.
The
more you think about that, the less sense it makes.
Yeah, like, yeah. Who's the reverse guy in that?
They're like, we have to get the uranium, and I'm like, where? And they're like, as much explaining as this movie does, it really doesn't.
It really doesn't. It's so... But Robert Pattinson wild, really brings it home, I swear.
Thrilled for the Batman team.
He's such a delight on screen, you know? He's such a joy to watch, because he's like, he's very fun, he's very charismatic. And in this, he's playing like the fancy lad to the protagonist's straight man, you know?
Yeah.
So, I mean, hey, we're done with it, right? We're done with Tenet, I guess?
We survived Tenet.
Oh,
somehow,
we didn't even describe the time travel part of Tenet, did we?
Oh, yeah, sorry. Well, it's a time door.
That's yeah, well, there's a time door that was made by future people, and the future people want to take resources from the past because of global warming. And so they're like, no more oil. We want your stuff. But there's other future people who are like, we're going to hide the key to Armageddon in the past. So they do. That's the movie, is getting those keys together. Tenet, the whole time travel thing. Events have already happened to our characters, right? The wife of the arms dealer, I think her name's like Kat or something. She tells this story because she's married to the arms dealer, who's like a real bad dude, and she's like trying to leave him. And so she ends up, they're on a holiday in Vietnam, of all places. So she tells our protagonist this story of the last time she was actually happy, was that her and her son went ashore, leaving her husband on the boat. And as they come back from being away from her husband, she sees this woman jump off the boat and into the ocean. And she's like, oh, I was just amazed by her freedom, you know, like she was free to do whatever she wanted to. And I was like stuck in this prison, and I kind of like admired her for that, even if she was, you know, a mistress of my husband. Turns out that was her from the future. After just killing her husband, she just dives off the boat. And so like the events have already happened. And they'll probably happen, like, forever and ever and ever, you know, in cycles, right? You know, by the time our characters start the movie, they've already won.
Well, not Robert Pattinson, well, but yeah. Ghost.
Yeah, he gets shot in the head, but in the past, but...
I did think the phone call bit was not bad. When she called, and then he was like, guess what, bitch?
He's like, nope.
I was like, nice,
nope.
Nice.
I literally know all of time. Yeah, I mean, there's definitely some good parts to it. Right? There's some good action sequences, but just like, disappointing. Not gonna lie.
No, incredibly underwhelming.
Moving on, getting out of the hot zone and moving into a lukewarm zone, The Tomorrow War. Streaming on Amazon. If you have Prime, you can check it out for free.
That was not the original goal. Obviously, though, when they made the movie, they were like, we'll put it in the real world. But unlike a certain Christopher Nolan, when they realized that we were in the middle of the Waterworld stunt show and everything was going to hell, they were like, you know what? Let's give it to Amazon.
Maybe not.
So people can see it. People did.
And it makes it real easy. Because, not going to lie, if I had gone to theaters and watched this, probably be a little pissed.
not as pissed as Tenet, but sure.
True. You know what? I probably wouldn't have even seen this. That's the thing. And you watch everything. What I will say. So...
I watch everything, and I don't hate this movie. I might like it. A lot of it has to do with the fact that the aliens, they spent a lot of money on
those.
They
did.
So the movie opens, and we won't describe everything, but the first, like, 20 minutes are kind of like exposition. People show up from the future, and they're like, hey, we're all going to die in, like, 30 years unless we fight the future war. And everyone's like, all right, we'll fight the future war.
They're like, actually, it's the tomorrow war.
And you don't know, like, you don't know what they're fighting. They mention white spikes. They're like, they're not human, so they're aliens. And it's terrible, and there's almost no one left, etc.
Yeah, there's like 10,000 people left. It's like, oh.
Someone's like, hey, why haven't we seen these aliens? And the recruiter's like, well, if we showed them to the people, no one would ever want to fight this war because they would lose all morale. So they go to fight the war, and they're like walking through this huge city, and there's all these bodies, and you're like, is this bad? And then at one point you see people cocooned, mm-hmm. like they're gonna get eaten later, and you're like, that's bad. But they save the aliens until like you hit like 30 minutes, and then you see them, and you're like, Jesus fucking
the
Christ.
The first close-up of them is
horrifying.
So good.
Their teeth are
insane. Like, they have tentacles, but they're also have like five legs or six legs or whatever. And like the first shot is like it's a Dutch angle, like up on like this like rubble, and like,
yeah, they're in a huge stairway.
Like,
yeah,
you know, you hear this like crescendo of like clicking and like and guttural noises, and you see its face, and it's just like panting. And I'm just like, oh, no. It's a good, like, you know, you take the time travel aspect of it. It's just a good monster movie, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Because
yeah.
They do a really good job of, like, making each encounter with the monsters different. And in the first, like, the first time they see them, they're trying to take down, like, two. And it's the hardest shit in the world. Like, everybody dies.
A lot of people die. A lot of, like Jet.
There's, like, three characters that survive.
Nobody's ready for that at all. And, like, they're smart, too. It's, like, the one thing that I noticed, they're fighting in the street at one point, uh-huh. and one of the aliens, like, nods to two of the other aliens, and they start flanking people.
Yeah.
And I'm like, hey, you're not allowed to do that.
they're, like, doing, like, the raptor calls. Good. It's good. Oh, I need to mention this. When they jump from the past to the future, something messes up and they like land in the building center, and it's just all these skyscrapers, and like 10 people make it. And everybody else, there's probably like 100 people that just smash against buildings, and it's just insane. I texted you as I was watching this, and I was like, because it opens with that scene of them all just falling from the sky, and I was like, it's a stupid time travel. And I was like, oh, something went wrong.
Yeah, you get the distinct impression that like aliens invaded the Earth, and then we fought them, and then we started to lose, and everyone was like, okay, we built a time machine, right? That's all we got. And then they duct taped a time machine together, and we're like, this will be fine.
Yeah. And then it wasn't. So our main character, Dan Forrester, played by Chris Pratt. He's an ex-military science teacher. And so he's trying to, like, lead the charge. And he's, you know, he has a wife and kid at home. And so after the whole attack, he ends up meeting up with Colonel Forrester.
It does take him so long. Like, they're talking to each other, and someone's like, Colonel Forrester. And he's like, that's weird. That's my name. And if I heard that, I'd be like,
hey,
is that my daughter?
But it turns out, It's his daughter in the future.
I thought she was probably the best.
Yes.
In this
movie. She's fantastic in everything. Who was the actor's name? She's from Chuck. Oh my god, sorry, I'm hiccuping.
Yvonne Stravovsky, I think.
She's Miranda in Mass Effect 2 and 3. But yeah, she is in Handmaids. That's, I think, her more recent thing. She's terrifying in that.
Yeah,
I hate
she's
her.
Not as nice.
I hate her so much in
or
that.
Or as save the world as she is in this.
So she wants to develop a toxin to kill the aliens. So no more aliens. Humans win. Bing, bang, boom. Clean hands. Clap, clap, you know? And so they end up capturing a queen or a female of the species.
After a few people get their heads crushed
in. Like 400 people die. But like... I'm like, we only have like 20 people left.
Hey, it was worth it eventually.
Eventually. And so, you know, they end up getting the mama alien, bring them back to like Sword Base, you know, which is
Ocean Base.
They end up figuring out a toxin that can kill the aliens effectively, specifically the females, because they're the ones who like kind of lead everybody. And she starts calling for help. And boy, oh boy, does help arrive in the form of like a trillion aliens.
So many aliens.
And they're swimming. No, they're tentacles.
They can do everything.
They
can swim. They can fly. They can shoot. They can think. They can talk to each other.
Yeah, they can't. There's no spaceships. They don't fly spaceships. But they do fly with little bat wings. And it's like, gross.
I'm like, ew. They also eat horses.
I did like when the helicopter was just like, nope. And just pivoted and just killed all of them. It was great.
Yeah, that was awesome.
Turns out that the plan of Colonel Forrester, her plan was like, well, we can't mass produce this toxin here. So what you're going to do, Dad, is you're going to take it into the future, into the past, where you can make a lot of it, and then we'll be ready for the aliens when they come. And he's like, no, I don't want that, because then you're left to die. And she's like, yeah, but like, you know, I won't be dead forever. And man, does shit go sideways so fast. Like,
she dies
in the most horrific way.
It's gotta be the worst way to die, because it's getting eaten by all of them.
What a great shot. Like, the cinematography of this is pretty alright. But, like, this...
But that shot...
That shot...
Also,
oh,
can you
God.
Describe the shot, please? Because right now, all we're doing is saying the
okay,
shot,
okay,
the shot,
okay.
The shot.
So, you know, they're fighting the female alien, and then it falls, and, you know, the daughter Forrester also falls into the ocean, that's literally teeming with these aliens. And I'm not saying like 10 or 12. I'm talking like trillions. I'm talking about like, you don't see water anymore. It's just aliens. And they're all chomping. And they all want her. And she's falling in. And it's just, oh my God. It's so cool. It's so great. I started off by seeing like, you know, I'm pretty lukewarm about this movie. But I'm like, you know what? That shit's real good. But as she's falling, Time Dad gets sucked back into his time because his conscription ends after
a week.
Yeah. We need to talk about the whole time travel aspect of it. We failed to do that on this time travel episode.
Sorry, the bit in the movie again is people arrive from the future, about 30 years in the future. We're at war with aliens, we're getting our ass kicked, and we're like, we really need help. So they start a draft and they send people from our current time to the future, and you get deployed for about a week. And at first you're like, that seems like too short amount of time, but it's because, you know, how terrible the aliens are and most of the people either die or get most of their limbs ripped off.
Yeah, they say 30% of people make it back, which is not great odds.
Yeah. So yeah, when Chris Pratt went over, he had a week, and then right as his daughter gets eaten, he gets jumped back.
Yeah. Yeah. And he has a best friend named Charlie, who...
I'm a big fan of Charlie.
Oh my God, I love him so much. He's in Veep, that same actor's in Veep. I hated him in Veep for like... an episode, and then I was like, oh my God, he's precious. He's so good.
There's like a werewolf comedy movie called Werewolves Within that he's in, and he's great.
Yeah.
Like, just, he's fantastic.
What a good dude. Yeah, so he makes it back to the present, and he's like, well, I have this toxin, I gotta make more of it. But he's also trying to figure out like where the aliens are, what are they up to, when do they land. Turns out no one really knows. They just kind of appeared one day, and he's like, well, that's not great. What if they're already here? What if the aliens are coming from inside the house? And so it becomes this little like montage of them kind of like assembling like the dumb Avengers of alien fighting. They figure out that the aliens are underneath like a bunch of ice in Russia, and they landed back in like 1000 BC or whatever.
Yeah.
Because of global warming, yet again, the aliens thawed out and they came out of the ice,
and
they started
eating.
Doing party time. They decide they want to kill him. They're going to kill him with the toxin, and they're going to blow him up. They're going to kill him before even the Tomorrow War can begin. And it goes so well for like 3 of them.
They have a whole team. You know what I mean? We have Time Dad, as we mentioned. Yeah. And then we have Time Dad's dad.
Yeah.
Good old J.K. Simmons, which is wild.
Jack's J.K. Simmons.
We have Charlie, who's lovable and great. And then we have another character named Dorian, who has cancer. But instead of, you know, trying to kill everyone with the time nuke, he's like, you know what? I'm going to do what I can while I can and go out on my terms trying to save mankind, which is the right thing to do. So they roll up, they go under the ice, and they find this giant ship. At first, it goes well because, you know, they...
There's like 5.
Wait, I should mention. Oops. Roll back the clip. They find pilots, and they're not the White Spikes. Like, this is another race of aliens. And they're like, well, that's fucked up.
They think about it for a second. They're like, huh. And then they keep going.
It's not like you can sit down in the ship and go, let's consider the ramifications. But it's kind of a cool little nod to Alien. Yes. And it's like, hey, there are other forces at work here. And maybe the aliens are either cargo or cattle, or maybe they were like a weapon used to destroy a planet. Because, you know, they're pretty good at that. Mm. And then they start, you know, injecting them with the toxin and the aliens dissolve into the horrifying goo. Like it.
We love the good
so
goo.
Much goo. So gross. The queen starts to wake up because she's a bitch.
She should have done her first, honestly.
Yeah. And then they all start kicking. And then the aliens get out and start eating people. Charlie kills one of them with like an ice chainsaw thing. And that's
because he didn't load his gun.
And then almost everybody dies. Dorian blows up the ship, but the queen's out because it's a film. Mm-hmm. And they chase it down, and she is hard to kill.
Yep.
But eventually Chris Pratt's able to kick it off a cliff.
Yeah, and it just explodes. It's great. It just splatters. The little happy ending, because, you know, they prevented future war. So I guess everybody that died...
didn't die?
From the future didn't die, because they'll be born in like 10 years?
Yeah, I think we're good. And everyone that got drafted and died is now no longer dead, which is wild.
No, everyone that drafted and died is still dead.
Why?
Because they died in the future. Because they died in the present.
Yeah, but none of that happened. What?
They disappeared. They ceased to exist. Because they left the present to go to the future and then died. So they didn't get back to the future. Or the present.
Well, no, but how could you die if the war never happened?
It's a dumb movie. Don't think about it.
Cut it.
No, leave it in there. It ends in a really weird way of, because apparently J.K. Simmons is a bad dad. He's been a bad dad because he has post-traumatic stress from Vietnam. And he's like, I would be a bad dad if I was around. And so he just left. And so the movie ends with Chris Pratt introducing bad dad to his family and being like, this is your granddaughter. And then they all hug and kiss. And that's how the movie ends. It's very odd.
Well, bad dad did help save the world. Yeah, I mean, I gotta give him that. I'm not saying I agree with the things that fake bad dad did to time dad, but...
yeah. No, I also don't agree with it. But at the same time, I feel like there should have been a little bit more of an ending.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm surprised that there was no, like, and then. Because it feels like a movie that would have an and then. You know what I mean?
The other thing that I thought was weird, and I feel like this might just be a Waterworld stunt show thing, but it ends with a voiceover from Chris Pratt, and the audio quality is so weird.
Yeah.
And also it's a voiceover, which is weird. It felt very Transformers-y to me, like it was Optimus Prime being like, the humans live.
The end of Terminator 2 is like, the human road to mankind is paved with the bones of robots. And I'm like, what are you talking about? Anyway, just less voiceovers.
Less voiceovers. It's lazy.
Because movies are about seeing, you know,
and it was weird because there had never been any voiceover for the whole film, but it just decided to end on it because it just was awkward. Kind of an awkward ending.
You know, something my sister thought is that the movie was maybe initially supposed to be Christmas because it takes place during Christmas for some reason. You know what I mean? Which is kind of weird. And I guess...
well, the first part did.
Well, technically, when he comes back, the Christmas decorations are still up.
Oh, really?
So I think that conceivably, when they blow up the enemy spaceship, it's still in December. You know what it made me think, though, is now that I've seen the Tomorrow War, I'm actually really excited for it. You know how they're doing an alien show on Hulu or FX Hulu, and the aliens are coming to Earth, and at first I was like, that's weird. But now that I've seen this, where it's about humans fighting like a super advanced intelligent monster, I'm like, you know what, maybe it could work.
Yeah.
Fighting the Horde in this movie was awesome. And I'm like, dude, if they can make an alien movie kind of like Aliens, but on Earth.
God, there's so many.
Or anything like that, I would love it.
So time travel is cool.
Time travel is cool. Sometimes it's bad,
it's
but usually
bad.
It's fun.
Sometimes it's real bad. Terminator is weird when it comes to time travel.
Yeah.
Oh. It's just this weird. Well, it's... well, I mean, it's the paradox of if they succeeded in bringing down Skynet, there wouldn't even be a Terminator to stop them in the first place. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You just cease to exist.
That's the problem with Terminator.
So it's just an endless cycle of Terminators and profits. Yeah. Did that new Terminator?
No, it did not make any money. I've come to the other side of that movie, by the way.
Because you were like, it's cool.
Because it's entertaining, but like, this is not in the episode at all. The problem that I have with Terminator is that the idea of one dude that can't be killed is boring.
Well, yeah.
Okay? And they did, like, they're like, Terminator 2 is cool, you have these two robots, and I'm like, great. every other movie, they don't, they, what needs to happen is the future just has to invade. It just has to be, you have to go, you have to up it.
Well, that's what I've never, that's what I've said about every Terminator movie. I said, why don't you just go back to revolutionary times where people are easy to conquer and they got rocks and that's it. And you just eat them.
Okay, Terminator 2 goes wild. They up the stakes. None of the other sequels have ever upped the stakes in a way that matters.
Yeah.
Three robots, four, a dozen. Like, just give me, go nuts.
So my favorite, so Shane, what's your favorite time travel movie? Mine's Prince of Persia. The Sands of Time.
Oh, Jake Gyllenhaal. How is he the Prince of Iran? God, I don't know. I'm looking at an entire list.
Would it be Donnie Darko?
I mean, I feel like that movie might age like milk.
Would it be Butterfly Effect 3 Revelations?
Revelations? No. I've talked about Time before, which I love, and that's from 2013, and that's a rom-com, yeah. And it's very good. Terminator 2 is great. We don't really have to talk about it. Back to the Future, like, as a trilogy, surprisingly consistent. Mm-hmm. First one's still probably the best one, but honestly, a lot of fun, a lot of wacky.
I like 2 a lot.
Yeah, no, 2's good. And weirdly relevant and correct.
Mm-hmm.
Luckily, not about the Jaws thing. You know, luckily we stopped at 4 Jaws's, which was probably a good call. Days of Future Past is, like, the best X-Men movie.
Yes.
We're not talking about Logan, because that's, like, a different... Days of Future Past as an ensemble X-Men film is incredible, and they use time travel really cool, and you can see, like, the old crew from the first 3 X-Men movies, and it's fighting Annihilation, you got robots. It's great. It's great. Big fan.
So one of my favorite movies of, literally, of all time is called Your Name. It has a different Japanese name, but it's an anime... And it's about...
Oh, yeah, that is about time travel. Holy
it's
shit.
About these two characters, a boy and a girl, a boy who lives in Tokyo and a girl who lives in kind of the countryside.
Meteorville, yeah.
And they, like, switch bodies. And, like, it's super late in the film that you realize that they're not just switching bodies, but they're switching, like, time periods because she's from, like, 10 years ago or something like that. Crazy. Not 10 years ago. It's like 3 years ago. But like...
10 years in meteor time.
Yeah. And like her town gets like wiped out by a meteor. And so it's kind of like trying to prevent that from happening. Such a good movie. I recommend it. I know I spoiled all of it right now, but it's... God, it's so good.
It's really good. It's so good. That was such a surprise too, because I definitely saw it on like a whim, and then I was like, holy shit.
Yeah, I was like, I guess I'll go because all my friends are going, and I was like...
Yeah, because it was like 9 at night, and somebody was like, yeah, we're going to go see Your Name, and I'm like,
whatever, okay. And then it was the greatest film I've ever seen. When I just want to cry my eyes out, I just listen to that soundtrack, and it never fails me. Anyways, I feel like time travel as a premise in a film has to be kind of loosey-goosey, you know?
Yeah, I agree with that. Unless it's more sometimes when it comes to explaining the finer points of physics.
And also just don't make it dumb. Don't make it like smart dumb, like Tenet, you know what I mean? Like make it dumb like Bill and Ted, you know, it's a fun time. But like Tenet's just a...
No, I know.
You know, I wasn't as mad about it until we started talking about it. And I was like, God damn, I got a lot of hate.
It started and you were like, yeah, Tenet was fine. Then you're like, I hate it. And then you're like, Tomorrow was fine. And he's like, I love it. It's been a fun episode.
You know what? I'm surprised myself.
So my one thing I want to say is that with time travel, and regardless of how you explain it, and again, I think you should, you know, be kind of flexible about it. You do have to kind of earn it. And what I mean by that, as convenient and powerful as it is, it shouldn't be too easy. Like, the journey back or forward in time should present, like, interesting obstacles. And it's a chance for a character to look at their lives in a way that you wouldn't be able to if you didn't time travel.
Exactly.
It just gives you options.
Yeah.
And you should use that. And even if, like, it feels a little deus ex machina, you can still make, like, the journey or the effect that it has interesting and compelling.
I like all of those things that you just said.
Thanks.
Should we go on to fucking Poopyville?
Oh, I want to mention one more thing. So this is like, this came out a billion years ago, but there's a movie called Project Almanac from like 2015.
Why do I remember that?
It's a bunch of kids making a time machine. I think this guy's trying to get into college and he's like, you know, the best way to do that is to try to build this time machine. And it starts as like a very, it's kind of like a fun coming of age film and all these guys are friends. And then shit just hits the rails so quick. And there's a butterfly effect and there's a ripple and people start like vanishing. And the police are coming after him because they think he killed somebody. And like, it's just nuts. But it's really kind of cool. And again, they don't explain most of it. But you're like, sure, that makes sense. Like they like take part in Xbox and then they use it to fuel the time machine.
Sure.
And they have like frozen gas. And I'm like, yeah, whatever. It's time travel. And it's like, it's really fun. And it's kind of endearing. And, like, they mess a bunch of stuff up and then they fix it. And you're like, okay, well, I guess the lesson is don't time travel. But then at the very end, he's like, well, maybe I'll time travel a little bit. And I'm like, yeah, buddy.
But I did get into college, so.
I just wanted to mention it because it's like, it's kind of like a comedy adventure kind of thing, and they do a good job.
That's cool.
Anyway, time travel is cool. There's only one Connecticut.
They're like, we're cops, but we hunt demons.
And the assistant walks through a giant portal
that he thought was art. The walls are shaking. Mirrors are falling.
She sees the devil, and I think it might be her dad.
And I'm killing people, and there's a frog detective, and you're...
Welcome to Middle Watch, our famous segment where we watch an episode in the middle of a show with absolutely no context. Today, we made the tragic mistake. I made the tragic mistake.
Yeah.
I'll take the fall for this one. I made the tragic mistake of watching Powerless, Season 1, Episode 11, No Consequence Day. It's important that I mention, though, before we dissect this one, that somehow this is the highest rated episode on IMDb. That's scary,
right?
That is
terrible. So, the premise of the show is people who don't have powers live in the DC universe with people that do have powers.
But apparently they work at Wayne Tech or some Wayne, part of Wayne Industries or whatever.
Their boss is Van Wayne.
And they make devices that are supposed to protect people from like supervillain attacks or, you know, general shenanigans.
Yeah.
Because, you know, if you have Superman battling a giant lizard, shit's gonna get pretty fucked up. And I'm like, okay, you know, as a premise on paper, I'm like, okay, you know, that seems kind of interesting. The DC sandbox is like huge. You have infinite potential here, right? Guys, they don't use it.
Not even once. Literally not even once.
This episode, which has a good hook, you know what I mean? You read the description, it's like, hey, Lois Lane dies, and then everyone thinks there are no consequences because surely Superman will just rewind the planet. And I'm like, you read that, and you're like, well, so many, it can be like the Purge. People would go nuts. Anything can happen. Nada.
Dude, it's like such
nada.
A wasted potential. Also, the cold open has nothing to do with the rest of the episode.
No,
the cold open is the Flash and Superman, who we don't see either character, by the way. They're doing a race around the world. It just starts off strong with someone.
The Flash better win.
I think he does. It doesn't matter. They don't even say. But they start off strong with someone with a sign that says "Flash me," and I was like, okay, this is what we're doing today. And I actually enjoyed that. That's the sad part.
Well, the bit where Teddy, you know, good old Danny Pudi has the little glass of water, and his friends are like, the Flash is not going to need water, and he's like, he might. And then the Flash does take the water, and then you see on his shirt, it's like, thanks for the water, the Flash. And I'm like, oh, that's
fun.
The intro rolls in, and it's a bunch of like famous comic book covers, and then the people in the background are the characters of the show. And that's kind of a cool representation of how weird it is, and sometimes how hard it is to, like, you're in the shadow of greatness, and you have all these crazy things going on, and you're just trying to survive in a world that's so much bigger than you. And I'm like, okay, cool. And then the episode starts, and that goodwill is gone.
Oh, it's
dust, it's atomized.
It is just nuked from orbit. There's also the score that's literally playing 24/7, and it's the worst instrumental I've heard in a long time on a television show. Like, it makes everything so like cartoony and light and weird, and it's just so odd. It's so odd, and it's constantly playing. So Lois Lane dies. And everyone's like, hey, Superman's gonna roll back time. So until he does that, we're just gonna have a party. We're just gonna chill out and we're gonna have a fun time. We're gonna do whatever we want. And everyone kind of like goes in their NBC, you know, family friendly time slot. They go crazy. One dude just gets a bunch of puppies, which I was like, that's fine.
Yeah, you can work with that. I can agree with that.
Another woman's just like, I'm gonna day drink at my office. And I'm like, go home and day drink if that's what you really want to do. I'm like, don't even be here, you know? Like, just leave.
She gets paid to be there though, you know?
You're gonna lose the money anyways. It goes back in time. Danny Pooney's character just tells people off. I don't even think he knows there's no consequence days because he just gets promotion after promotion for being honest with people, like brutally honest. Do we want to talk about Vanessa Hudgens? I feel like we have to talk about Vanessa Hudgens. So
this is one of those things where the main character is supposed to be like the person who's good all the time and like does all the work and is nice to most people, and I'm like, you know, it's kind of boring. Mm-hmm. In this episode, at least, probably the whole show, it's a weirdly good cast for the show.
It is.
Especially with Danny Pudi and Ron Funches and Alan Tudyk or whatever, a lot of weirdly good people in this.
They're given nothing to work with.
No, there's no chemistry. There's no spark. Again, the main character, Emily, is just pretty stale. Maybe not as bad as fucking Wendy, her whole character is to be weird. She's not super likable. It's just kind of off-putting.
Honestly, my biggest problem with this episode in particular was Wendy. There's not one thing I can put my finger on. And I feel mean saying that because I'm sure she's a very nice and talented person. But the writing and like the directing just wasn't helping.
There's a part where she's like, I need to have a long lunch. And Emily's like, why? And she's like, well, I need to dress up as a grandma to convince a bunch of people that are taking drugs in the park that time travel is real. And I'm like, that's just insane, but not in a funny way. It's just upsetting.
Feels like something upsetting. That someone would write.
It feels like a Gilmore Girls joke.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
I was gonna say like a sophomore level feature class. You know, they're just like this will get a giggle or two, and it doesn't work.
Yeah, the boss. Van, his main beef is that, so he's cousins with Bruce, yes, Wayne, right? His main beef is that Bruce Wayne never wants to hang out with him, which might be because, one, kind of a dick, two, he's Batman, so, you know, a little busier than most, perhaps. Also, probably doesn't sleep a lot, mm-hmm. You know? So his bit is that he finally calls Bruce Wayne and just tells him to fuck mm-hmm. off. And then Bruce actually, like, respects that and then sends a helicopter and they hang out.
Yeah.
Which, I don't hate.
No,
I think that's kind of a funny bit. Because then he rolls back and he has all this swagger and he's like, yeah, I hang out with Bruce Wayne now. And guess what? He's Batman. And it's like, that's a fun bit. Anyway.
Oh, we didn't talk about Vanessa Hudgens, what her thing was.
We didn't really. Her thing
She's like, well, I'm going to get a cupcake.
She's like, I'm going to eat a whole cupcake and a big coffee. And I want to see a weird circus. But NBC doesn't have money for a whole circus. So I don't see the
really
circus.
Because they had this episode. Just kidding. Get it? Calling it a circus.
It, you know, when a character who a whole thing is like that, she's, you know, squeaky clean, that she's really level-headed and super nice and kind of boring. She has an opportunity to do anything, and she's like, "Well, I'm just gonna get a big coffee. I'm gonna almost smoke some weed, and then the cops show up, and it's like, haha, funny." And I'm like, "Ooh boy, this joke did not age." Great. And then they go to prison for 5 minutes, and then she has a conversation with Wendy, and Wendy's like, actually, my parents are evil, so feel bad for me. And I'm like, okay. And then they leave prison, and like, that's all she does in the episode. And I'm like, what? No, it's so weird. One of my big problems with this episode, I'm talking too much, is that it's so contained.
Yeah,
it's so contained. And I know that's kind of good for us because, you know, we're watching it with no context, but there's no like romance through line, or there's no like slow burn. I'm not saying romance is the be-all, end-all for television, but it's a good through line to help you keep watching. But there's no romance. There's no, like, rivalry. There's no, like, fun friendship or people. It's just so, like, contained and non-consequential. And I guess I know that's the name of the episode, but, like, as a viewer, it should have consequences for us.
Exactly. And the thing that I, it really wigged me out was, Ron, the guy with the puppies, right? His character's on his own little spirit quest. Like, all the characters are doing literally their own thing, except for Emily and Wendy. They're the only two characters that are, like, actively interacting with each other. Everybody else is like, oh, I'm doing this now. I have 10 dogs. And I'm like, but there's no, like, even if there was any chemistry with the cast, which, like, I think the writing really stifled, if there could have been, because they're not interacting, they're not given the chance to have any chemistry. Maybe that's how every single episode is, you know? So they go to jail. Right? Wendy and Emily, they go to jail for 5 minutes because they have weed. They're like, oh, I should live without consequences today. Emily's like, are you thinking what I'm thinking? And Wendy's like, that we kill ourselves to see what the afterlife is like? And I'm like, that's good! Like, that's funny.
That is funny. And I'm like, I'm not saying I would do it, but not the worst suggestion, you know?
But like, that's what I wanted. That level of insanity I wanted from the entire episode. So they end up escaping jail the easiest way possible, and they leave, and they go back to work, and, what's her name? Emily, Vanessa Hudgens, is like, she's sitting at her desk, and she's like, I can't believe I'm an ex-con, I can't vote, I can't go to jury duty, no man will ever want me, and I'm just like, oof, you're what? And like, this show isn't that old to be getting away with that, you know? I think it's like 2017. You know, there's a psych out kind of halfway through the episode where they're like, actually, Superman is at Lois Lane's funeral. So, like, he's not going to bring her back. He has a date at the funeral and he's squeezing her butt. And then it's like, oh, that was a shapeshifter. Superman got out of prison. Now he's going to turn back time. And he turns back time and nothing matters. That's the end of the episode.
It's wild that Martian Manhunter and his girlfriend were like, Superman was like, hey, can you guys do some PDA at the funeral of my girlfriend? Like, I don't know how that was arranged, but
I wish that was Superman at the funeral, because that's funny a little bit that, like, actually Superman, the paragon of, like, morality, would be like, I have a date at my girlfriend's funeral. Like, that's a wacky thing.
Now that we described the bit, a question that I want to throw. Do you think that this kind of show would work better if it had been connected to the Arrowverse, or if it was connected to, like, another show or another universe? You know what I mean? If they had something to play off, do you think that would work better?
Well, maybe, because you have you have a general concept of normal people cleaning up after superheroes or dealing with, you know, the ramifications of a world with superheroes in, like, the first season of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yeah, no, it's definitely a similar vibe.
But that succeeded.
Yeah, Powerless didn't branch out, really. And again, I know it was only one season, and we'll talk about how it was canceled very unceremoniously. But yeah, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. also had, like, you know, characters that interacted with each other, and they had slow burn romance and the people who got betrayed.
Exactly.
And it was a different genre.
Oh, exactly,
I'll give you
yeah.
that. It was more of an action show, and that is generally, you know, more exciting and more stuff is going on. But again, they spent way more time on character and they trusted those characters.
But to answer your question, I would say yes, because as right now, I mean, or as the past, Powerless was just this, like, how do I describe it? If it was just in some Looney Tunes world where random weird shit happened, there would be no difference. You have to change, like, two names, and there'd be no difference, right? Because, like, the interactions with superheroes, or, like, feeling the effects of living in a world with superpowered people, there was none. You felt none of that while watching the show. They were there in, like, name only, but they didn't exist, you know?
I know, I get you. It felt very shallow, and it felt like it very superficial, and you didn't really feel like you were in that world where anything could happen and where somebody could go back in time to save their girlfriend and thus turn an entire day back, because that's, like, an incredible world to be
yeah.
in, but you don't feel that when you're in this show.
I don't know. It was just a lot of nothing. It was, like, offensively nothing.
I also think it would work better if it was connected to, like, the Arrowverse or a version of... It'd work better if it had other shows to play off, or at the very least, if it actually included, like, some of these people.
Like, I feel like, you know, I can appreciate the whole conspiracy bit of it, you know, where they're like, actually, Superman can turn time around. It's like, okay, like, that's taking something from a character that's, like, super weird, and, like, no one talks about that or uses that anymore, because it's, like,
I always
it's
think
super
about it,
weird,
though, to be honest with you.
But they don't do anything with it. It goes nowhere. It's, like, it's only there to set the stage. That's it.
To set the stage for a bad play that ends, and
you're like
well,
I guess that was 20 minutes of my life. Do you want to talk a little bit about the history of this show? Because it's a doozy. So, interesting enough, it has 12 episodes, right? But if you were watching this on TV, you would think there were only 9 episodes, because the last 3 never made it on air. So the one that we watched never made it on air.
Never happened. There were no consequences. Superman erased
so,
it.
So it originally aired on February 2nd, 2017. Pretty good time of year for television, right? Or pretty good year for television. On April 25th, so, like, you know, about 2 months after it aired, NBC pulled the final 3 episodes of the series from the schedule with no indications whether they would reschedule for a later date. The series was officially canceled on May 11th. The unaired episodes were made available on TVNZ on demand starting the day later.
Yeah, they all eventually found their way online, but it is almost insane
yeah.
that they didn't even let the show
no.
end.
I can see why, but, like...
I can also see why, but, like, you already did them. I don't understand what that so rarely happens.
It's, yeah, and it's, I mean, not even the cape. The cape had the full run.
So that's that. That's the little history I'd like to mention. So this show came out, as we said, in 2017. 2017, a big year for superhero television. Inhumans, brought to you by good old ABC, came out in September 29th of that year. Probably the worst thing Marvel has ever done and something they want you to forget about. But also Defenders came out on Netflix on August 18th, 2017. And that was also so, so terrible. But also Iron Fist came out on March 17th, 2017. And that was also just amazingly bad.
Yeah.
There were just a lot of superhero shows that came out in that year. Some of them so, so bad. But it's just kind of interesting to see, like, other shows that also showed up and then vanished. Like, Defenders was canceled.
Oh, yeah.
And Inhumans was obviously canceled. And then other shows that were on around the same time, Supergirl, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., Gifted, and The Runaways, and Legion. So, again, there was a lot going on that year, superhero-wise. Some good, and then some Iron Fist,
yeah. So, if we can just pop back real quick into Powerless, talk about some reviews. No, by all means. People liked it at first. They said it was endearing and amusing. Specifically, Eric Goldman from IGN said, "It has me looking forward to seeing where it can go." I guess the bin. Do you hear that on the wire? Oh my gosh.
You're going to watch a city block get blown up by a jet.
There's a dog. There's a cool purple outfit.
And if you put it on, the world ends.
It doesn't make sense. Because
it's weird and in space, but on Earth, I don't know.
Who thought? Who would have thought? Not me.
Welcome to Newstown.
Welcome to Newstown.
Nope, didn't like that. Welcome to Newstown.
Newstown train.
The segment where we tell you things that you already know. really wanted to get that train bit in there,
did.
I see. Blumhouse Productions and David Gordon Green are bringing us a direct sequel to The Exorcist for some reason. In October 13th of 2023, the mother from the original movie is returning, and Leslie Odom Jr. is going to be kind of like the main character. He's like a father, his son's possessed, it's a whole thing. So there's a Predator prequel coming, I think in 2022, called Skull. I don't know why. Apparently 3/4 of the way through production somehow, despite people knowing almost nothing about it. I think it's about, it was reported, it's about a Native American woman, and they compared it to The Revenant. So it's supposed to be just, like, incredibly fucking brutal. And kind of like the first, more like the first one where it's kind of like people against impossible odds. And then the greatest thing that we as people can do is kind of like learn through experience and then get better. And like our intelligence is like the thing that wins us. Because, you know, we're not super buff and we can't shoot nets out of our arms. Apparently Comic-Con happened. I didn't know that until like super recently because it kind of came and then disappeared. And they revealed some new things. Jordan Peele's new movie is called Nope. We literally know nothing about it. The poster has a storm cloud and a kite. Daniel Kaluuya, Kiki Palmer, and Steven Yeun are going to be in it. So that's a pretty solid cast. Pretty pumped about it. Warner Brothers announced something pretty wild. And it's that they want to produce 10 films in 2022 as HBO Max exclusives. I don't know if these will be like good, but it means they're committed to having like a powerful slate on the digital side of things. And they talked about the success of Godzilla vs. Kong and Justice League, movies that I don't think are good, but that's fine, as kind of evidence that people are willing to, like, subscribe to watch movies that people spend a lot of money on.
Tom and Jerry 2. Tom and Jerry 2.
I'm glad, like, that they're continuing to, like, have faith in HBO Max, and hopefully that means we'll get some cool stuff for free. I mean, semi-sort of free, because you have to pay, you know, the fee for the month, whatever. Michael B. Jordan, his production company is going to make a Superman show for HBO Max, and it's about Val Zod, who's kind of an alternate Superman from Earth 2. Apparently, he's a devout pacifist with a fear of open spaces, and then he learns that he's Superman, so I imagine he has to go through some things.
So he's not claustrophobic, he's anti-claustrophobic.
I think it's agoraphobic?
Oh.
Is the term? Anyway, it's unknown if Michael B. Jordan will play him. That's what we're all hoping, obviously. But all we know is that HBO is doing this, so I'm kind of intrigued. Oscar Isaac made a surprise appearance at Comic-Con, and he was like, Moon Knight is going to be fucking wild. And he was like, I literally can't say anything else. And there are rumors that Moon Knight will show up in the next like Avengers or Avengers thing. And again, we don't know what that will be either. All we know is that people are going to fight Kang in some capacity, and that's all I can tell you with
Which
any confidence.
King? Who knows?
Probably a big one, with a gun, I guess.
So, we have to talk about something that is pretty messed up. And it's also not new. State of California. The California Department of Fair Employment and Housing, the DFEH, is suing Activision Blizzard for a pretty toxic frat boy culture where female employees are constantly harassed, discriminated against, and underpaid. It's not new in the gaming industry. It's not new in tech, you know? Not that that is any excuse at all, because what they've done is just horrendous. And, you know, find all this information online, because you're reading an actual journalism summaries of all this stuff is going to do it a lot more justice than we ever could. But the details of the case are pretty horrific. Like these things called cube crawls, where male employees will just get trashed out of their mind and harass women from cubicle to cubicle. It's terrible. It's this horrible, horrible stuff. And something about the state of California is it doesn't necessarily, it's not super litigious, you know? So it only really takes cases and will, you know, bring stuff to court when they are pretty confident in the case, you know? Yeah. So they're sure about their evidence. And Activision Blizzard, for their part, has continued to downplay and kind of disenfranchise the people that have been affected by all this stuff. And so today, there was a employee walkout at the, at least to my knowledge, at the Irvine campus. I don't know if any other, you know, campuses had the same kind of organization. I definitely recommend reading more about this, and, you know, keeping yourself informed, especially if you're interested in the gaming industry, because this is hopefully the start of a big shift, because that's kind of what is needed to right the ship. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Don't want to talk about this too long because it is super serious and way out of both of our depths. You know, hey, how about you, as just everybody, believe victims and treat everyone equally and fairly, you know? Because that's good. And don't...
Yeah, if I
and
do.
Don't, and you know what? Leave this in. I'm going to get hot
second. All right. Here it comes.
But, like,
bring it.
Screw you, Activision Blizzard. Specifically Blizzard. Because you tout, like, oh, every voice needs to be heard. And then you silence victims of, like, you know, harassment and assault. And, you know, screw you guys. Screw you. You know, I'll probably be damned if I play another Activision Blizzard game. You know, fuck you guys. Pay your employees and don't harass people. Just, you know, a thought.
The nightmare that just never ends.
Keep your fingers crossed.
If that orange juice was just a mega lawsuit.
Good old Cyberpunk 2077.
Whoop, whoop.
Yeah, there's a lot of room to
grow. A lot of room to grow, you know?
What a segue, everybody. Segue of the year. Okay, but Cyberpunk?
Yeah, so there's a real quick Cyberpunk from a friend of the show, Paul Tassi. Not friend of the... He doesn't know who we are. I would love to know who he is. He's got a corgi. It's fantastic. It's a cute little corgi. His name is Evie. I watch his YouTube videos. Anyways.
okay.
So there is a sort of update on Cyberpunk, because there really hasn't been anything new. Not that it's like a, you know, a live service game that needs to be constantly updated, but, you know, there really hasn't been any hot fixes recently. There hasn't been any patches since, I want to say February or March. So it's been a minute. And so people are asking, where is the 1.3 patch? And, one of the game directors, the global community lead at CD Projekt Red, responded with, "On the way." So probably nothing. Probably means nothing. You know, who knows? That's kind of on track with the Epic Games Store had a listing saying that, you know, there would be that 35 gigabyte patch, you know, a few weeks ago. So we'll see. There aren't really many people playing that game anymore, you know, due to the fact that there isn't new content, you know, constantly being added to the game. But at the same time, there's not a lot keeping people, you know? They play through the game and it's buggy or it's kind of like non-functioning and they don't feel the need to continue to play it after they beat the game or after they get a significant number of hours under their belt. We'll see. Hopefully 1.3 comes soon for everybody that wants to play the game. Hopefully it includes some new content as well with some long overdue quality of life improvements. So that roadmap that they published earlier this year, looking to be completely inaccurate now. So we'll see if there's going to be a new one. There might be a new investor call soon, but who knows? Not I. Not me.
So, Trevor.
Yes, Shane.
Where can people find us if they want to suggest a Middle Watch episode or if they just want to say hey?
We are on Twitter and Instagram at OutOfDodgePod. If you are listening to us on Apple Podcasts, give us a rating. Give us a little review. It helps our show get discovered. And it's just a nice thing, you know? We want to know what you guys think of the show.
Oh, and I want to give a quick shout out to my friend Steven, who helped me research this terrible, terrible show, Powerless.
Steven. So I really have to blame Steven then for this.
No. It was my fault because I prompted him to help me look the show up. So I'm the devil Jesus. Here.
Powerless is like, I think when the sleep paralysis demon? I think it's just the embodiment of Powerless for me. Like, that's my sleep paralysis demon.
It stands there, and you're like, are you going to haunt me? And it's
no,
like,
no, I'm just going to eat a whole muffin.
On this, and on this, and welcome to our video.
We had a reptile. We wish it wouldn't have been alive.